CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives for today. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers. Lee, if you'd like to introduce our sponsors.
Sure. Today's show is sponsored by Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management, consulting services, and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of clients describe Delaney as outstanding and excellent. Also, SAP Business by Design, a fully integrated business management software solution designed for small to mid-sized companies that want the benefits of large-scale business applications without the need for a large IT infrastructure.
And today's news article comes from CFO Magazine. They have issued the 6 costly cloud mistakes for companies that go on to a cloud computing environment. Number 1, not taking full account of financial commitments on existing hardware. Number 2, not factoring in your own unique requirements when signing up for a cloud service. 3, signing an agreement that does not account for seasonal or variable demands. 4, assuming you can move your apps to the cloud for free. 5, assuming an incumbent vendor's new cloud offering is best for you. And then finally, number 6, getting locked into a cloud solution that you cannot get out of. Good words from CFO Magazine. And today, Patrick Emmett joins us to discuss the role of the CFO. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
Very pleasure to be here.
You are Chief Financial Officer at ASAP Staffing, and previously you've served in a variety of financial roles. Patrick, just to start off with, tell us a little bit about your background and why you chose the path to CFO.
Initially, growing up, I always enjoyed numbers and math, I guess, in school. So decided to get an MBA in college and went into industry. I also wanted to, at some point in my life, run a company or be part of the leadership of a company. So it occurred to me that to do so, you need to have understanding of different aspects of a company, whether that's sales, operations, on and on, including finance. But I also knew that I wanted to concentrate on the finance side of it. To me, finance gives you the insight of whatever is going on, whether it's in the economy, whether it's in a company, whatever that is. Throughout my career, I started off at Frito-Lay in the sales organization and moved into the finance organization, and then did a stint at another company with that was a more operationally based company. So I really wanted to get different aspects of a company and how they performed, and so I've sort of built my career around that, and then in the last 10-some-odd years have structured my career on finance side.
So did you actually start in sales?
I did. At a graduate school, my first position was running a route for Frito-Lay, and it was a training program for the district sales manager position. And so you had to run a route for 6 months. So there I was schlepping chips at convenience stores and supermarkets for 6 months. Again, and it goes back to also my philosophy that Frito-Lay was a big proponent of learning from the bottom. And so when I then moved into finance, I was able to add a lot of value to our vice president of sales for the whole region because I really understood how many 25-cent packs of Cheetos sold at XYZ convenience stores and why. So I've always been a proponent of learning from the bottom, understanding what it takes to run things, so you can then add value to the leadership and then hopefully at some point become the leadership yourself.
That's a very unique start. I think you're our first CFO that has actually come through the ranks of sales. And very often in the finance function, we're targeted with the head of bean counter that can very often be a negative connotation. Mm-hmm. But as much as anything, the conservatism with a small c, the inward element of being a finance person, from the get-go, you were very outgoing, you were into sales and so forth.
Yeah, I think part of that stemmed from a, after college or during college, playing tennis, playing professional tennis after college, before going to graduate school. I enjoyed, you know, sort of the competitive aspect of things. And so going into that, although even at the time it seemed initially strange to go into, one, Frito-Lay is an exceptional organization. It gave me a great entree into the company, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
So zip forward a couple of years. Now you're at ASAP Staffing. Tell the audience what ASAP Staffing is and does.
ASAP Staffing is an IT solutions company focused on predominantly Fortune 50 companies, but we augment IT departments at large corporate customers, clients of ours, as well as business solutions, IT solutions, and projects for the same type of customer.
And you're privately held?
We are privately held by two exceptional women that are leaders in women's organizations nationally and internationally, Nancy Williams and Roz Alford. I've come to enjoy very much working for them for the last 3 years.
Well, that's phenomenal. And clearly you have a perspective of worldwide interaction just from the fact that you're dealing with multinational companies and you source yourself internationally for some of your activities.
That's correct. We have an operation in Hyderabad, India, that helps us source. It gives us the ability to source on a 24/7 basis. Which has been a big plus for us from a competitive standpoint, certainly as you come out of an economic environment that we have over the last 2 years or so. I think the ability to be competitive and quick will make a big difference. Not that people are sourcing outside of the country as much anymore. I think that's trending more to the U.S., but the ability to source around the clock gives you a competitive advantage. And it's not something you set up quickly. It's a process to go and set something up internationally, and we've already gone through that process over the last 3 years. So
what created that initial step to going into that foreign outsourcing, or should I say foreign sourcing for you?
That was actually the brainchild of Nancy and Roz. I think they had the foresight of doing so. A customer had asked, one of our largest customers had asked them to go to India for their sake. And so they decided to take, being the entrepreneurs that they are, to take that step. And, you know, as it may end up, the economy ended up going down over the course of the last couple of years, but we were able to continue to fund that operation and actually turn it around to our benefit over the last couple of years to where we've been able to iron out any sort of wrinkles that may have happened. And now they're a fully integrated part of our recruiting and sales organization and very helpful.
So what are the challenges for the other CFOs and business entrepreneurs out there that are looking to go international? Clearly, you've dealt with the Indian market. Talk to us a little bit about the startup of those operations and the ongoing impact for the finance function.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is understanding really what it's going to take to go into those markets. It's going into India is by no means an easy thing to do. They are not as automated as we are here in the United States. Thinking that you're going to open up a shop in India the way you do here in the United States is just fundamentally incorrect. And so you really need to know and do your homework beforehand, you know, besides the fact that you need to have a partner over there as well that's going to be able to help you. It's not a close place. You can't just shoot on an airplane and be there in a couple of hours. I mean, it's a fully 15-hour flight to get there, and you're in a different world. So, you know, my advice would be to really partner with somebody else that has been there, knows the ropes, because there are a lot of different things that you can get tripped up by.
What about basic things like setting up bank accounts, setting up payroll processing?
Absolutely. I mean, all of that are very different than they are here. It's very labor-intensive, and maybe not labor-intensive, but it's very manual, let's say. They are still opening up the big ledger books and triplicating papers. And it's not fill out this form on the Internet or fill out this form on the computer and it shoots throughout systems. It just doesn't work that way over there.
So what about the bank account? As a U.S.-based company, U.S.-based entrepreneurs and owners, how do you get that first credit in India.
I think I'll be honest, I didn't help set that up initially. So, but we have a part, you know, our country head there who is one of the partners in the company. But Roz, our owner, spent a lot of time over there going through that whole process, and so you know, we have a very good banking partner over there, but it took some, you know, local dealings there.
So what about foreign exchange fluctuations? How is that impacting you? What's the impact today?
So far, it hasn't impacted us that greatly. We don't, again, coming out of the economy that it has, we are basically covering the payroll and all that over there. So we don't do business there, bill here and do business there or vice versa right now. Now, going into the future, that may turn into something else, but as of right now, that's not the case.
Excellent. Well, what are the key challenges for today's CFO? What do you see those as being?
I think it's getting to know, you know, the new economy as it's, we have just come out of, you know, a very difficult time. Certainly from a banking standpoint, your treasury, treasury challenges are a lot different than they used to be. It's not good enough to have good credit. You've got to have the relationships with your bankers. You've got to be creative in the way you're going to finance things and grow. I mean, it's not easy to grow in today's market because of the whole banking situation.
How accessible is capital in today's environment?
That was my next point. It's not. It's challenging.
Is it out there?
It is out there. And depending on your relationships and who you're dealing with, we were able to just recently refinance to a much, much greater degree with a very good partner who was Wells Fargo, and it worked out very well for us, but it took some doing. And it's certainly your current lines are being scrutinized, being lowered. So we were very fortunate to have been able to do that. So now we're ready to grow for the next few years.
In terms of the companies that you've worked at and now being in a service-oriented industry, the focus in terms of any requirements that a bank or financial institution has, you don't have inventory quite in the same way. Your assets are people. So what level of certainty and expectations, there are no guarantees in this world, but what were their requirements and demands of you?
No, it's a good question. For us, it's we don't have inventory, but you know what's almost as good is the clients that we have, and we have a list of Fortune 50 clients. Our top, you know, five or six are all, you know, the most well-known companies in the world, and so you know, it's like we joke with a banker that you know, it may take some time to get paid, but you know you're going to get paid. So because of that, we were able to, our receivables were so good. We've never had a write-off on our receivables. They were so good that, you know, they were basically money. And so because of that, we were able to really juice up our line and got a very good partner in Wells Fargo to do so.
Excellent. That is great. And let me switch tack a little bit because you haven't come through the typical career path, but what did your experiences in logistics, supply chain, and then operations provide to you along the path that you're using today?
Mm-hmm. Again, originally it was to get myself prepared to be a partner in running a company. I don't mean a partner as far as like a law firm, but to partner with other executives to run a company. And
the influence upwards.
Correct. And dealing with people in different situations. You know, also from a pricing standpoint, my background in the logistics where I headed up our supply chain division globally for finance let me understand from a pricing mechanism, you know, what drives pricing in operations, what drives pricing from a – that ended up being a huge benefit to me in this company because we did a lot of staffing people in logistics centers around the world. So it helped me understand that. But also in dealing with different types of people, I've dealt with from a union boss to, you know, the guy on the route truck. So all the way up to the CEOs of companies and presenting to the board at the Brinks Company type deal. So it gave me a the ability to learn to communicate well with people, you know, culturally, what drives people to success. And then at that point, which is very helpful, helps you drive people to do better than they think they can do or get results indirectly.
And clearly you're in a people business, so you're in the right home.
Right.
What do you see in terms of today's economic environment? We've had guests over the past couple of months talk about some pickup in the environment. You've mentioned yourself that as a company, you've just been able to secure some credit with one of the national recognized banking institutions. Are you seeing any impact in terms of that? You've talked about your customers slow paying. What is the next year going to bring, do you think?
Yeah. I didn't want to insinuate that our customers are slow paying. They're actually very good at paying. The point I was sort of making is there's no, from a bank standpoint, from our receivable, there was no real fear that it wasn't going to get paid. But going back to the question, thanks for letting me clarify. We did also see a big pickup this year. We've seen considerable pickup in the requisitions that are coming from our clients. Interestingly, although we thought that was going to continue to pick up at an increasing pace, it seems to have lulled a little bit, and I think you're sort of seeing that across the economy.
Is that just the summertime lull?
Who knows? It may be. It may be that people are taking a little break, but we're still very bullish on staffing, especially from the IT standpoint. People are definitely re-engaging on large projects at our companies, that our clients. And so we foresee that continuing to move forward. We're planning for very significant growth for the next couple of years. And because of wealth and our clients, we're going to be able to do so, I think.
Are you seeing any impact on the length of the sales process? Is it taking longer today to sell versus 2-3 years ago?
You know, interestingly enough, that was the first thing we really noticed, was it took more resumes to fill a requisition than it did before. Before it may take 3, it was taking 8, for instance. And I think you're starting to see that peel back a little bit. But what that made you do was become better at what you were doing. Operationally, it really made you focus and take a look at the process that you had in place as far as what you were submitting to people and how could you make yours more competitive, you know, instead of having, so going from the 8 to back to the 3 because you've made your resumes or your process better. Yeah.
So in that regard, it's an odd element of an high unemployment situation that your customer or your client, rather than accepting what was 3 or 4 before, now you probably actually have a bigger and better pool because of all the layoffs that have taken place, yet you've had to help educate your customer.
Right, that's correct. The pool got bigger. It's now starting to dwindle a little bit. The quality stayed during that process. And IT staffing didn't take the hit that other staffing areas did take. And especially for us in the sort of the staff aug and the project work, set aside the permanent side of staffing, didn't take the same hit, and it's projected to grow quicker. So,
interestingly enough, as we look at labor statistics and projections, not only for the U.S. but worldwide, I guess European markets and beyond, we are hearing and seeing that the world is going more and more to a temporary basis, an outsourced basis. I heard some statistics recently, in fact, yesterday at a meeting I was at, that said that the average person being born today, by the time they turn 38, will have had 14 employers. And for the, I guess, our parents and beyond, one job for 42 years and then retirement with a good package. That's not around.
Yeah, I think our parents would probably absolutely shake their heads at that. I think we would shake our heads at that, although coming through the 90s and into the 2000s with the dot-com, you know, it was not usual to see someone at a company for that many years anymore. I think that sort of trended a little bit back to, if you see someone with too many jobs, you know, why are they job jumping, kind of a thing. But that's an interesting statistic, 14 to 1. But you're right. People are, I think this economic turnaround showed companies it was fairly painful for some of these large companies, and to be able to flex up and down without the pain of, you know, mass layoffs and being in the news and lots of costs associated with that, I think you'll see that this industry goes to a little bit more. You're always going to have your staff that you keep on the company. But I think from a percentage standpoint, you know, where you may have been a 90-10 ratio, you may go to a, you know, an 80-20 ratio, for instance.
That's very interesting. So one aspect of the CFO role, and I'm jumping tax on you here quite disproportionately, but information, data, financial statements, the world of how you tell your owners that, hey, can they take that bonus this month, this year, but also the way that you tell your employees the information that you provide to your bank. What role today for you does the system play in terms of giving you access to information?
It's absolutely critical from a speed standpoint, certainly in our industry, but I think economy-wide, I think your ability to be fast and accurate is clearly going to set you apart and give you the ability to be differentiated from your competitors. Excuse me. For us, it's imperative to be able to find people very quickly, find good people very quickly, and be able to submit them. And that's not finding somebody and then manually doing something. It's a very system generated thing for us. And we, over the course of the last couple of years, changed our system that we were using to be able to go to market much quicker from that standpoint. Also, financially, you're right. From the bank standpoint, being accurate, tying everything together so it all does, you don't have one number here and one number there, is critical to a banker's confidence level. Being able to forecast accurately and hit those numbers, it doesn't, in my opinion, being 10% above or 10% below is basically saying, or let's go 20%, it gives an indication that maybe you don't know all the drivers. So being accurate in your forecast, and the way to do that is systemic as well. So systems play a critical role, certainly in our business, but it will be, you know, going forward as well.
You mentioned forecasting. We're in the turn of the year where a lot of companies start looking to next year and beyond. Mm-hmm. Last year, many of the CFOs had indicated that they almost gave up on forecasting longer than 6 months because there was really no point. What are you doing in terms of your forecasting? What are your peers doing in terms of looking out into that future?
Yeah, it certainly was difficult last year, and it remains a bit of a challenge because of what we thought might be a continuing slope up. Looks like it's lulled a little bit. From our business standpoint, we created a new division from a customer opportunity that we won, and so that's led to a lot of growth for us. But predominantly for us, it's really understanding what makes up your customer, their market. If we're looking from our aspect alone, you know, what type of people are in there? How are those projects growing? Are they longer term? Just really knowing your business and peeling it back so, you know, you can get to the intricate parts that really are driving those customers' business. And the growth for yourself.
So how do you gather that data? We use a lot of Excel spreadsheets and other spreadsheets, not to focus too much on the Microsoft products. But do you use spreadsheet capabilities for information gathering, or do you have other means? You talked about India being very manual.
India is manual from a country standpoint as far as setting up different things. No, our system is able to be accessed. We use an ISP for our operating system, and it ties everything from the person, ties emails to each candidate, to a placement, to whatever. But from our reporting standpoint, we have a reporting package that sits on top of our accounting package. And we were very fortunate to hire someone a couple years ago that was exceptional and very inquisitive herself at reporting and learning how to report and breaking things down. And it was this from my days at Frito of really peeling back the onion and really understanding what's driving your business. I've always been that way. So it's always been critical to me to understand how many W-2 1099s, third-party lines people are in each account in each city. And, you know, let's look at it top line, but then please give me the information three or four layers down. And so that took some time to put into place, but it's critical. And if you don't have that in place now, you know, don't sit there 12 months from now wondering why you didn't do it 12 months ago, which is today.
Now, does the service industry approach the forecasting and budgeting process in a different way? Do you start with sales and then drill down to the cost function, or do you start with the cost function and drill up to the sales? How do you approach that?
It's sales-driven predominantly. You're going to use different ratios associated with what sales and gross margins. Really, the revenue is key, but the gross margins, what, you know, as we all say, the gross margins what switches the light switch on. So it's understanding what the different margins are with the different types of business and the different kinds of people in those business are generating to then get that blended margin to then you can build your costs down below that and understand what it's going to take to then go ahead and generate that kind of revenue.
Question for you that is an unusual element that comes and creeps into the finance function discussions that we have is related to taxes. Some CFOs take the perspective of we've got a tax department or a tax expert that helps support the timing of those tax payments, and that's really the main emphasis of the focus of that on the budgeting process. In a service environment, is it any different for you?
We count on our accounting people to give us an estimate of what our tax is going to be. We obviously accrue for them on a monthly basis and make, you know, estimated quarterly tax payments. You know, that is in conjunction with our accounting firm that we use.
Great, great. Well, how does a service-related company plan for contingencies, risk management? Obviously, your role in supporting your clients is to support their needs for IT, for infrastructure, and for the people to support that. How do you plan for that?
That's a good question. We have a very strong IT director. So from a system standpoint, we have the people that make up ASAP staffing are all sort of big company people and are very capable people. And to Nancy and Roz's benefit, they've been able to put together that group of people that would that can handle that. So we have a very strong IT person that makes sure that we have systems that are backed up from a financial standpoint as well. We have a number of different systems from a financial standpoint that we can, you know, if something goes down, we're able to back that up. We know our business from different areas, or different people in the business.
What is the biggest risk to a service-related industry? Is it theft of customer data? Is it inability to have that new high quality of staff 1 year, 3 year, 5 year? What are the risks that you are trying to plan for?
Yeah, a big risk is the customer information, where you are at a customer, what cities you're in, who those managers are, who's hiring. I mean, basically the whole – you know, the whole idea of the business is who is hiring and who are we supporting from a client standpoint. So client information, location, who those people are is critical to make sure that those are safe and you have backups for the risk associated with that. We do that as far as when we hire people and then after they're let go, how do we control that from that standpoint? But that is critical. And certainly the financial information, there's two people in the company that can deal with that, can mess with that, and besides the owners, and that's myself and my accounting manager, and so we keep it very, very safe from that standpoint, and a number of different controls. You know, from a financial standpoint, you don't have any one person doing any two things. You know, to write a check, you have one person who has can get the check, one person that can stamp it, and one person that can write what that is. And that's those are processes that were put in place, again, from my old days of having to deal with Sarbanes-Oxley and all that sort of stuff, that you just make sure that you don't have any issues with that.
What about insurances? Is there a different type of insurance focus for you managing a lot of people and not the inventory, not the assets, not the, the heavy structure of equipment?
Yeah, you don't have the issue of work, a lot of workman's comp issues, other than maybe a bit of carpal tunnel, maybe. The insurance is not that significant. You obviously have to have insurance. Our director of HR, who is also a lawyer, makes sure that we're fully covered from that standpoint. And different customers have different needs from an insurance standpoint for you to have. So he makes sure that we're covered from that standpoint.
Very good. And I'm not going to ask you to maybe give us any look into the looking glass for the future of ASAP, but as we look into the future of companies at large and as a CFO, do you see your peers looking at not only the organic growth, but is the acquisition market beginning to pick up? Is that looking a little bit more attractive?
Yeah, I think the acquisition market is looking up. The challenge is, are you... your ability to acquire, you know, with the banking situation the way it is, you know, are you financially able to do so? Not only financially able to, but operationally able to handle, you know, combining the two cultures together. When you go through a downturn and you downsize, or your bank has lowered your line, again, you've got two sort of whammies. But I think as we're coming out of that, you will have the ability to do more. We've certainly set ourselves up to do so. Whether we do or not is another issue. But we've done, over the course of the last 3 years, you know, we've grown organically exceptionally well, over doubling our revenue, six times our profitability, gross margins up, 300%. So we focused very heavily during the downturn on our gross margin and our operating margins.
So stick to the knitting.
Stick to the knitting, yeah. Do your core competencies. Do it very well. During the downturn, take that time to focus on what's the best process so when you come out of it, you know, you're sort of coming out of it running.
Well, we, in wrap-up, have a question that we ask all of our guests, and I'd like to pose that question to you, Patrick. The tradition on the show is to ask, what is your CFO tip of the month?
I guess my tip of the month is to really understand your business as we go into the forecasting and budgeting process for the next few months, but really be able to peel back the onion and know your customer, know what makes up your customer and what drives them. And why they're giving you the business, and you'll be more successful.
That is a great tip. If you know why they're giving you the business today, you'll be able to prepare for it tomorrow.
Correct.
Well, thank you very much. We'd like to thank you, Patrick Emmett, for being our guest today and for sharing your innermost thoughts on the role of the CFO.
You're welcome.
We would also like to thank our contributors, CFO Magazine, for that article on cloud computing, and to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies and small businesses alike. For more information about Delaney, go to www.delaneyllc.com. And thanks also to our sponsor, SAP Business by Design, the software as a service business management solution for small to medium-sized companies. For more information on their products, go to www.sap.com. This and other thought leadership about today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. If you are a CFO and would like to be a guest on the show, please contact us via the web. And thank you for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chulvers signing off. Until next time.